Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, everybody. Cheryl Akison here. Welcome to another edition of Full Measure After Hours. Today, ranked choice voting may soon be coming to an election near you. What is it? And who are the powerful forces that are working to change America's election system? Talk about confusing subjects, and critics say that's one of the weaknesses, in fact, of ranked choice voting, how confusing it can be. That also makes it a great topic for my cover story this week on Full Measure, Sunday, March 17th. I try my best to explain it very clearly and succinctly, and to get to the bottom of what it is and why is the idea sweeping the country. If you've listened to my podcast and watched Full Measure, read my books, you know that few things that sweep the country, these ideas are typically not organic today. More often than not, they're well organized. So I wanted to know who's pushing it, who's the big money behind trying to switch our election systems to ranked choice voting, who stands to benefit. I would say there is not clear consensus in every case on the answers to these questions. In some instances, not only are big billionaire liberal interests pushing ranked choice voting, in some cases more conservative causes are pushing it too. But by and large, as you'll hear in today's podcast, the line is fairly well drawn between liberals and conservatives on whether people think this is a good system or a bad system. And I thought the best way to tackle this subject is to get the best of both sides in the debate. So we will be hearing from Deb Otis of Fair Vote and Scott Ganz of the American Enterprise Institute. They each give their pros and cons, why they think the system works or doesn't work better than what we have, and why ranked choice voting, as I stated, could soon be coming to an election near you. By that, I mean it's going to be on the ballot for you to vote, where you will have to decide as a voter, do I want this system in an upcoming local or state election? Here are Deb Otis and Scott Ganz. But can you just start with Deb, in the shortest, most succinct way possible, describe what ranked choice voting is?
Ranked choice voting is a better way to vote. It gives voters the option to rank the candidates on their ballot. Voters will get to choose who is their first choice, their second choice, and their third choice, and so on if there are more candidates. It gives voters more power, and it promotes majority winners in our elections, something we're not doing a good job of right now.
And how would you describe it?
So I completely agree with the first part. So ranked choice voting, which is otherwise known as instant runoff voting in some places around the world, gives voters the opportunity, instead of just voting for one candidate, to submit a ranked list of candidates. The place where we disagree is whether it supports majority outcomes. So it supports the majority outcomes of the last two candidates, but it doesn't always support the majority outcome among all the candidates. And at least recent history has shown that in the presence of certain types of electorates, particularly ones that have partisan polarization, candidates that have true majority support don't actually get selected.
And we'll go back to some basics in a minute, but can you answer that idea that maybe the majority person isn't getting elected?
Ranked choice voting promotes majority winners because a candidate needs a majority of votes in the final round of the runoff in order to be declared the winner. In our current elections, when you have more than two people running, you end up with split fields, maybe two similar candidates split up their base of support, so neither of them wins, even if they had the more popular position. And so in ranked choice voting, initially, your vote always counts for your first choice. If your first choice is eliminated. If they don't have enough support and they don't make it to the final round of the runoff, your vote goes to count for your next choice instead. So your vote stays active and your voice is still heard in the election. But not every voter is going to rank every candidate. There will be voters who say, I only like this one candidate and I don't want my vote to count for anyone else. And that's okay. Voters should have the freedom to do that. What it means is sometimes in that final round, there are some ballots that are not counting between the two finalists. It's just like in a runoff election. Some voters choose not to show up and cast a vote in the runoff if they either don't care between the two candidates or if they had some other reason that they chose not to turn out. Short of requiring voters to rank every candidate, which we don't want to do. We want voters to have freedom here. Short of requiring that, this is as close to majoritarian as you can get.
Tell me how that would work if, let's say, going into a ranked choice situation for three candidates, if you can kind of describe.
Sure. If there are three candidates, candidates A, B, and C, your vote will count for your first choice in the first round. Say you love candidate B, so you ranked them first. You're okay with candidate A, so maybe they get your second choice, but you don't like candidate C, so you either don't rank them or you rank them last. And so your vote counts for your first choice, candidate B, in round one. If candidate B is in last place, once you count just first choices, they get eliminated. Your first choice then didn't make it to the runoff. But we still want your voice to be heard. We still want your vote to be counted. So your ballot goes to count for your second choice. And now you as a voter have helped your second choice instead of helping your last choice.
And to Scott, you can add to this too if need be. Is this a relatively new idea or is this a system that's been used, you know, for centuries somewhere else?
So the idea of a sequential elimination process for electing candidates is nothing new. And the properties of ranked choice voting or instant runoff voting have been well understood at least since the early 20th century. So properties of sequential elimination elections like ranked choice voting, which is an election system where there are a series of rounds, and if there's no winner at the end of a round, we remove one candidate and then we retally the votes. Those have been studied for a long time. The sort of properties of instant runoff voting or ranked choice voting have been well known since at least the beginning of the 20th century. There are a lot of voting systems that have been studied for literally hundreds of years. Ranked choice voting is one of them, and it's used in a number of places around the world, although more commonly as what's called a single transferable vote system when we're trying to elect multiple candidates. I think it's a little bit more recent that we've seen such widespread use for, in effect, single candidate elections. And I think that actually whether you use it for a multiple candidate election or a single candidate election, it gives you sort of different kinds of outcomes. You're trying to get a different kind of, you're trying to get a different type of electoral outcome depending on how many candidates you're selecting, you're trying to elect.
And what would you say about the history and why it seems to be more front and center the past 10 years or so, I think, maybe, than before? You tell me if that's true.
We have seen a lot of growth in this country over the last 10 to 15 years. The more elections we see with ranked choice voting, the more evidence we have about how it's working in practice. And so we see impacts like increased positive issues-focused campaigning and less mudslinging. We see winners with broader support among their constituents. And the more we are seeing these outcomes in practice, more cities and more states are choosing to opt in. I think one of the reasons that the single winner version of ranked choice voting is popular here in the United States is that it plays to some of our American ideals and traditions about elections. We have a long history in this country of wanting majority winners. We have a number of states that hold two-round runoffs in order to get a majority winner, and even more cities that do that for offices like mayor. Ranked choice voting aims to do the same thing without making voters show up and vote a second time a few weeks later. And this helps with turnout, and it helps with condensing those campaigns into just one campaign cycle.
Now, tell me if I'm right about this. I was thinking when I was trying to listen to an explanation. One outcome that I'm not sure is good, it's up to people to, if this is even true, someone who gets no first choice votes, a candidate who nobody thinks is the best candidate, could end up winning an election with ranked choice voting?
That's not true.
Okay.
Ranked choice voting requires a candidate to have some base of first choice support. Because candidates are eliminated one at a time, if there's a candidate with no first choice support, they're eliminated first. They're on the chopping block. The only way to survive to the finals is to have some people rank you first.
Okay.
But then, if you don't get a majority of those first choices, you also have to have broad appeal to pick up some second and third choice votes. So the candidates who do best will be ones that have a strong base of first choice support and also have broad appeal beyond that base.
And what would you say, Scott, is succinctly, what would you say is the biggest argument against ranked choice voting?
So the biggest argument against ranked choice voting is that it doesn't select candidates that support the preferences of the electorate as a whole as often as we would like for an electoral system. So traditionally, when we think about an electorate, especially the American electorate, we think that we can sort of array candidates on a spectrum from the left to the right. And when we think about what's a representative outcome, what do we want the election to accomplish? The answer is we want the candidate who ends up winning to be close to the middle of whatever that distribution is. So we'll often talk about the median voter as being the voter that we would like the elected candidate to have preferences that are roughly aligned with. And the problem with ranked choice voting is that you don't end up electing the candidate whose preferences are aligned with the median. It has this extremist bias. It has a tendency towards electing candidates who are further to the left or further to the right relative to other electoral systems that, once again, we've been studying for hundreds of years that also take advantage of the fact that if you ask voters to rank candidates, you can have more information and you can be more likely to end up with an outcome that represents the electorate as a whole.
What is the best argument you can think of against non-ranked choice voting system, I guess what we consider the ordinary way in a lot of places?
I would say that our current election system is rewarding extremists, and ranked choice voting is doing the opposite in practice. In our current elections, they work fine when there are only two candidates running, but as soon as you add a third candidate or a fourth candidate, the electorate can splinter, and we end up electing fringe candidates who only have a small sliver of support. They only appeal to one base of the electorate rather than having broad appeal. This is what we're seeing in our current elections and why we're so polarized as a country right now. Ranked choice voting promotes majority winners. And I think there is a question about the different ways that you could choose a winner from ranked ballots. If you ask people to rank preferences, there are a number of ways that you could determine a winner from that. You know, the method that's used in the United States is the instant runoff, as I've described. But there are also methods where you, say, assign points to each vote. Like a first choice vote gets, or first choice preference gets the most points and then fewer points and so on. But those systems tend to introduce a lot of opportunities for strategic voting, maybe give an advantage to a voter who can do the math and be a good strategist. And so I like typical standard ranked choice voting because the best strategy as a voter is to throw strategy out the window and vote your honest preferences. We want to free voters to vote sincerely at the ballot booth.
Is there any example that people could relate to you can think of that shows a candidate, as you say, who's more extreme, didn't have maybe that much support, who ended up serving in an important office or any office that might not have turned out the same way if it were ranked choice?
Well, I think we have a number of examples in Congress because of most of our congressional districts are what we call safe seats. Most of them are red seats or blue seats. And whoever wins the primary for that majority party is almost guaranteed to win the general election and get a seat. Fair Vote did a report last year called Fewest Votes Wins that tracked how many congressional candidates won office with less than majority support. And right now, the Congress has plenty of members that won less than 40% support in their own primary, but sailed through in the general election because they're from a safe seat. And so we look at the incentives for Congress to collaborate, cross the aisle, work on bipartisan issues. There's not much incentive to do so because they're coming from safe seats and they only have to energize one base from their district rather than having broad appeal.
And Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
So I'm going to flip the script a little bit. What would you say is the best argument, Deb, against ranked choice voting? Just seeing the other side and hearing what they have to say.
I think some people are concerned that it seems new and different. And it is a change. This is a different way to vote. The ballot looks different because it lets you rank your preferences. The results look different. If there's no majority winner in round one, the results are going to show you multiple rounds before you see who the winner is. And initially, especially to elected officials who know how to win under the current system, this can seem new and scary. Luckily, it has been around, it has been studied, and we have evidence of how it's working in practice. And so we're not worried about unforeseen consequences here. We have a good handle on the consequences and how it's working in practice. And so we can continue to uplift the positive stories of how it's going.
And do you see anything positive about it? What is their best argument for ranked choice voting?
So the best argument for ranked choice voting is that we should get as much data from the voters in terms of their preferences over candidates, full stop. It makes a world of sense to have voters rank candidates as opposed to just asking them who their most preferred candidate is. The place where we disagree is when you think about how do you use that information to inform a winner. The way I think about it is there's data and then there's an algorithm. And in order for the algorithm to work well, you need good data. And in order to use the data as well as you can, you need a good algorithm. And so we agree we need good data. And where we disagree is about the way that we should compile that data to select a winner.
Is fair choice pressing to make presidential elections work this way? Would that work?
One of the areas we think this could have the most impact is in presidential primary elections. Presidential primaries are sort of a unique beast in our election system because they tend to have crowded fields and fields that are in flux. Candidates drop out right before a state votes. And so voters who maybe cast a vote during early voting, they've voted for a candidate who already dropped out come primary day. We call those zombie votes, votes for a candidate who's not even active in the race anymore. And so when voters are nominating a field of 10 or more candidates, voters need a better way to indicate their preferences on the ballot. It's not good enough just to be able to choose one and cross your fingers. Five states started using ranked choice voting for presidential primaries in 2020, but only for the Democratic presidential primaries because the Democrats had the crowded field last cycle. As we look forward to 2024, the crowded field, the field that's in flux, looks like it could be on the Republican side. And I think Republican voters will want a better way to parse that field and be able to be more expressive on that ballot. Maybe say, I'd like any of these three, but I'd like to maybe downvote those other two.
Is that something that each national party has to or gets to decide?
In some states, the parties decide. In the majority of states, the state legislature would decide. And so state legislatures would need to pass a bill in most states. There are active bills in the current session in half of the states around the country for ranked choice voting legislation, and a number of those deal with presidential primaries. And so we are definitely supporting that legislation in the states.
Now, I've learned as a reporter for decades that when big money is behind an issue, I'm always a little bit digging a little deeper. I start out with some skepticism to see what's going on. Doesn't mean there's anything at play, but I did notice when I noodled around on this in the last year or so, there's big foundation money around the globe. The Soros foundations and so on are pushing this. Republicans are also funding it in some cases. what's behind the big money push by these big money foundations and politically toned billionaires, for example? What's their interest in it?
Most of FairVote's funding comes from individual donations, but we do get a number of larger donations from foundations. And I think these foundations tend to invest in a number of good elections or pro-democracy type reforms, and they're looking for more stability in our politics, I think. When we live in such a polarized society, it can be, I think, challenging to do business and plan ahead in this country, not knowing which direction policy is going to go in over the next few years as our politics becomes more and more gridlocked. And I think some upgrades to our elections help us inject more stability into our political system and make it easier to make progress on every other issue. Once we solve the structural issues in our elections, then our elected officials are more accountable to voters and are more able to take positions on popular issues that their constituents are asking for.
Are Soros-connected foundations and some conservative foundations contributing to FairVote?
FairVote is proud to have donors from across the political spectrum. And yes, we've had liberal and conservative donors in the past. And over a decade ago, we did get a donation from the Open Society Foundation before my time at FairVote. And we're proud that folks from across the political spectrum are attracted to this reform. They're attracted to FairVote because they think that our work can help expand and make this reform grow faster.
And you don't see a particular political bend to the movement, is from what I understand. What are your thoughts about, there's quite a bit of funding going into this, which is why we're hearing more about it and seeing a lot of change in recent years.
So I think that there's broad interest in combating extremism in American politics. And one way to combat extremism is to make sure that our elected officials are representative of the people as a whole. And the current electoral system, where we start with partisan primaries and then move on to, in effect, two-candidate plurality rule in most cases, leads to this problem where, in effect, elections become extremely consequential in too many cases, because the candidate who wins or loses can lead to this sea change in who's in power in government. And that's probably not a desirable outcome, right? We probably want something more stable. We want something that really does represent the preferences of a moderate voter, the median voter, somewhere in the center of the distribution. Now, one of the places where we disagree is that I think that the best way to accomplish that is by choosing an electoral system that actually targets a moderate voter, a voter, the median voter, a centrist voter.
Which is what?
What kind of a system?
Yeah.
So there are a lot of systems which choose candidates that win pairwise elections. So if you compare candidate A to candidate B, candidate A to candidate C, if they win a majority in all of the sort of head-to-head comparisons, then they're guaranteed to win the election. We'll call that a Condorcet method. There are a number of them. They've been studied for a really long time. One that we're probably all familiar with would be called round-robin voting, which is sometimes called Copeland's method, where literally what we do is we just tally the number of pairwise wins for every candidate. And if you beat more candidates head-to-head than everybody else, then you're the winner. And so this is an example of one system where we're guaranteed to have a candidate who wins that looks like, in effect, that median voter, the central voter in the population as a whole. I think that that system is one that we should be experimenting with. I think that other systems that seek to basically target that middle voter are ones that we should see experimentation with around the country.
Okay, a counterpoint. Yes, go ahead, please. You respond to him first.
Our research has found that ranked choice voting and these Condorcet methods would elect the same winner more than 99% of the time. So it's nice to be 99% in agreement. When these methods differ, it tends to be because there is a candidate who got very little first choice support, but was a very popular second choice. And I think it's a legitimate question about which of those two candidates should win. A candidate who got a lot of first choice support, but maybe less second choice support, or a candidate who didn't have much first choice, but was very common as a second choice. And so in the less than 1% of the time when these systems would differ, it tends to be a situation like that. And so luckily, we agree that the system we're trying to change is what we're doing now. Either of these methods is a huge improvement over where we are now. And we're happy to work together to advance these types of reforms.
Can I jump in to talk about that? So it's hard to make the claim that ranked choice voting or instant runoff voting agrees with a Condorcet winner 99% of the time, sort of in the abstract. Now, in our most recent experiment with ranked choice voting in the United States, which sort of Alaska is noteworthy because this was the first time that we've seen ranked choice voting adopted in an election, in effect, in a purple state, right? In a place where we have sort of right-leaning voters and left-leaning voters that are competing in the same election, right? This was a bellwether, and it's a case where ranked choice voting failed. In the special election, we observe sort of a candidate that's to the left of the center in Mary Peltola. We have a candidate from the right of the center in Sarah Palin, and we have a candidate who's closer to the center in Nick Begich. And this is a classic example of the failure of ranked choice voting, where the centrist candidate is eliminated first, and as a result, you end up with a candidate who has preferences that are more extreme than the median voter. So when I look at the data, I say, you know, this is going to be really influential for sort of informing my beliefs about using ranked choice voting, adopting ranked choice voting going forward, especially in an increasing polarized society.
What about the Alaska example?
I think there's an assumption built into your narrative there that the correct winner should have been someone else. The person who did not win was Republican Nick Begich. I think there's an assumption from your comments that Begich should have won. I disagree. Begich was in last place. He got the fewest first choice votes. Ranked choice voting is not designed to reward the candidate who comes in last. I think if ranked choice voting regularly produced that kind of result, I'd be booed out of every room I walked into to advocate for this kind of method. I think that we need a method that rewards candidates who do have a strong base of first choice support, candidates who are willing to take a position on an issue rather than trying to float through the middle, not make anyone upset, but not take any strong stances. Voters need issues-focused campaigns. I also think the winner of that election, Mary Peltola, is not an extremist or an ideologue by any metric. She is a pro-gun Democrat. Her chief issue is protecting fisheries, and she hired a bunch of Republican staffers for her congressional office. I think she really defies the red-blue divide and certainly would not qualify as an extremist candidate. I think she's the candidate that Alaskans wanted, and they reelected her with an even larger margin a few months after this first election.
Okay, so well put, both of you. And it just raises my thought about reforms or proposals to redo the system. Both of you have discussed them. Are made by people who don't like how elections are going now or don't see outcomes that they think are fair or, for whatever reason, are flawed. But what if they're not? So, I don't know, I just keep thinking people who don't like who's being chosen are coming up with ways to make sure those people aren't chosen. And that sounds like some people might object to that to me. What do you think?
And so I think this is why we should evaluate the quality of our election system in terms of how likely is it to select the candidate that represents what the people want, instead of designing an election system that seeks to satisfy some special interest or sort of the existing party structure.
What would you say to the idea that these new ideas, maybe not so new, but the ideas to change things are coming from people who just aren't happy because the candidate they like didn't win?
I think a lot of us tie election outcomes to the system, and I think that's a really valid concern that we hear from folks. However, if we look at the non-majority outcomes we see right now, I think this was not what the founders intended. We were intended to have an informed electorate making decisions based on majority rule. And a system like ranked choice voting gets us a lot closer to that intention than what we're doing now.
Okay. You each get a chance. I'm going to say 30 seconds. You don't have to time yourself, but just a brief wrap up of the takeaway that you'd like people to have about this. I don't care who goes first.
I can go.
Okay.
So when we look at the Alaska special election, here's a wonderful example that demonstrates how ranked choice voting doesn't lead to the election of majority winners. So Nick Begich did have a majority of support against Mary Peltola and against Sarah Palin. And because of the algorithm, because of the way that ranked choice voting systems compute who the elector, who wins the election, he was eliminated in the first round, and one of the two candidates who did not have majority support ended up winning. This is indicative of sort of the fatal flaw of using an instant runoff system, which we call ranked choice voting here in the United States. And we should be experimenting with other kinds of systems that we evaluate in terms of, does it select winners who represent the interests of the people who are voting?
Okay, Deb?
Ranked choice voting is a better way to do our elections because it's good for voters. It lets voters vote their true preferences without worrying about becoming a spoiler. It's good for parties, like how the Virginia Republican Party used it for their nominees in 2021. Governor Glenn Youngkin came up through a ranked choice voting process because there was a crowded field of nominees. The party wanted to ensure that they could nominate someone with broad support to put their best foot forward and really unify behind their nominee, helping the party to win that office, the first time the Republicans won the governorship in Virginia in over a decade. And lastly, ranked choice voting solves problems. It's used by parties to get stronger nominees. It solves problems in cities where it can be used to take a two-round runoff election and consolidate it into one round while still gaining all the benefits of a runoff election. And it is great for campaigns. It creates more positive and issues-focused campaigns.
The full story on ranked choice voting and the impact that it's had in some key elections so far this Sunday, March 17th, is part of my cover story on Full Measure. I hope you enjoyed today's podcast and that if you did, you'll leave a great review, subscribe to it, and share it with your friends. And be sure and check out my other podcast, the Cheryl Akison Podcast. And now you can support independent journalism causes by visiting CherylAkison.com and clicking the store tab. There are some thought-provoking and fun products designed exclusively for independent and free thinkers like you with slogans such as, I need to find some new conspiracy theories. All my old ones came true. And do your own research, make up your own mind, think for yourself. Proceeds benefit independent reporting causes. And lastly, don't forget to pre-order my new book, Follow the Science, How Big Pharma Misleads, Obscures, and Prevails. This is must-have information for anyone trying to take charge of their health and their family's health in today's conflicted information environment that is so highly managed by pharmaceutical interests and political interests. You can pre-order Follow the Science at HarperCollins or Amazon or anywhere you like to order your books. Do your own research, make up your own mind, think for yourself.